You're listening to Seeking Office. My name is Armin Rana.
Okay, so could you start off by introducing yourself and your role at the Georgia Strait?
My name's Charlie Smith. I'm editor of the Georgia Strait. I've been working at the Georgia Strait for 25 years, first as the news editor, and I'm a great admirer of university journalism.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. So we've been following former nonpartisan association NPA counselor Rebecca Bly's decision to leave the NPA and become an independent. This was largely motivated by the NPA's new, quote-unquote, socially conservative trajectory. Could you start out by briefly summarizing how the NPA is politically situated?
Traditionally, the NPA was a center-right party in Vancouver, but maybe with a little more emphasis on the center when it came to issues relating to social conservatism. In that, the NPA was the first party to have an openly gay councillor elected, which was Gordon Price back in 1986, and he served six terms on council. In the 1990s, there were lots of LGBT elected officials with the NPA, including Laura McDermott, Duncan Wilson, Alan Featherstone-Haugh on the park board, Alan Herbert on council, and other candidates. So this was a party that was seen to be LGBT-friendly and more centrist. You might want to characterize it as kind of federal liberal in a way, especially when you look at someone like Philip Owen, who was the mayor in the 1990s until 2002, that he brought forward some harm reduction measures. In recent years, the party has veered somewhat to the right. But what happened in the last election was most of the councillors who were elected, I would put more in the federal liberal camp than the conservative camp.
And so a recent article you wrote in The Strait calls for greater transparency in how the NPA selects its caucus members. Can you explain how this process works?
It's been actually quite atrocious for quite a few years. Back in the 1990s, they would hold nominating meetings, and there were raucous events with membership drives and all of these things, and I think it helped the party succeed. But what's happened in the past three elections has been the board choosing candidates for the most part in 2011 and entirely in 2014, including the mayoral candidate. And then in 2018, the board chose all the candidates except the mayoral candidate, which went to a nomination. But even then, the board vetoed two of the prospective candidates, including a sitting councillor. So the board has wielded tremendous power over the nomination process in the NPA in the past three elections.
So is this process different from how other civic parties operate in Vancouver?
Vision Vancouver was operating that way for many years, not as completely, but most of the nominations were being awarded in that way after the incumbents were elected in 2008. But at the same time, in the last election, Vision had quite an open process for nominations. COPE has always had very competitive nominations. Yes, Vancouver, which was a new party that emerged in 2018, it selected its candidates. So it's gone both ways, but the three kind of long-serving parties in Vancouver, which would be Vision, which started in about 2005, and COPE and the NPA, the NPA has been the outlier, I would say, in its nomination process.
I see. And so basically, when you say the board itself is elected by the members. It's just the board then selects, in the NPA, the board then selects the candidates or, in some cases, vetoes candidates from running if they do have an election.
Yeah, that's correct.
So Councillor Bly cites the election of new board members in the NPA, including the BC Conservative Party president, Ryan Warawa. And former Rebel Media BC Bureau Chief Christopher Wilson as an indication of the party's rightward shift. Now, the NPA has always been a center-right party, and as you mentioned. So can you explain why the election of these board members is causing so much concern?
Well, I think it's partly Ryan Waugh was always being, a fairly hard right-winger in Vancouver. He's a known entity. But he is president of the BC Conservatives. His father is a long-time member of parliament in the Langley area, Mark Warwa. I think it's that this Stephen Harper's never been very popular in Vancouver. And so you get someone like Christopher Wilson, who's on the Conservative board, and Ryan Warwa, who are probably, I can't speak for Ryan as much, but with Christopher, is a Harper admirer. Christopher Wilson has been a Trump defender on Rebel Media. And I think Rebel Media itself is problematic because of the coverage that it gave Charlottesville, where many people on both sides of the border felt that Rebel Media was running content that was defending white supremacists. Christopher Wilson wasn't the person in question there, but he did defend Trump's response to Charlottesville. So you've got that aspect. On the socially conservative side, Phyllis Tang, who ran for Yes Vancouver, was endorsed by a group of social conservatives, as was another new board member, Ray Goldenchild, when he ran with Vancouver First. And Vancouver First was kind of a fringe party that was explicitly against the SOGI 123 program that's rolled out by the province to ensure that we have LGBT-friendly schools, including independent schools and school districts.
So the SOGI, just for our listeners, SOGI stands for sexual orientation and gender identity.
Yeah. So that's one issue. The fact that a Vancouver First candidate and someone else who were each endorsed by a group that also endorsed almost notoriously anti-SOGI 123 candidates like Barry Neufeld in Chilliwack or Heather Leung in Burnaby, and Heather Leung was the one who was bounced from the conservative slate for homophobia. So I think this is a concern to someone like Rebecca Bly, who's in a same-sex relationship herself. And she just said, enough. I don't want to be part of this group anymore.
So just to go a bit back, there's these two new board members who have ties to the kind of the traditional Conservative Party, which is Christopher Wilson and Ryan Warawa. I can never get that name right. And there's also these two candidates, part of the executive of the MPA, the new secretary Ray Goldenchild and treasurer Phyllis Tang. And Ray Goldenchild, who is black, was actually misreported by The Straight and others to have appeared at an anti-SOGI event. But as you mentioned, both of them did previously run as candidates in parties that at various points in time put out socially conservative or anti-SOGI positions. So let's talk a little bit about that. So in his statement, Goldenchild pinned to his Twitter account, he included the following sentence. The context is necessary to point out Ms. Phyllis Tang and I are both visible minorities that have achieved high positions within the NPA. How diverse has the NPA been historically, especially in terms of supporting women and minorities? And how are they prioritizing that today?
That's a very good question. At the board level, they've had two previous presidents who have been minorities, at least two that I know of, Tung Chan and B.C. Lee. Tung Chan was an immigrant from Hong Kong. B.C. Lee was an immigrant from Taiwan. At the council level, I was disappointed in the lack of diversity in their council slate in the 2018 election. In the past, it's been mixed. I don't think it's been that great. In 2014, I thought there was a lack of diversity on the NPA slate. In 2018, they had a candidate of Chinese ancestry running for mayor Ken Sim, but he didn't speak either Mandarin or Cantonese, which are the two main Chinese languages in Vancouver. And then none of the council candidates, they were all white, and they had opportunities to nominate people who spoke different languages. I think also when you're talking about, we're all a multiplicity of identities. And I think when you think about diversity with regard to the political process, it goes beyond just simply skin color. I think if somebody's an immigrant, they have one experience. If they're Canadian-born, they have another experience. I think having a capacity with languages is very valuable and should be made a priority in politics, because there are so many people.
But they haven't been made a priority, you're saying, in the NPA in recent history.
No. I think in the 1990s, they did a much better job, and even the late 1980s. The NPA was the first party to run and candidates. The first Chinese-Canadian woman who was elected was an NPA candidate. There were people of Chinese ancestry, Bill Yi, before in the early 1980s, so Sandra Wilking wasn't the first. But through the Gordon Campbell years and Philip Owen years, they always had candidates of Chinese ancestry, and most of the time who could speak languages other than English. So you had Tung Chan, you had Daniel Lee, you had Don Lee, and also LGBT candidates, also candidates of South Asian ancestry, most of whom didn't get elected. One was elected to school board, but I attribute that to the racist electoral system.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about that, because you wrote another article, I believe, a while ago, talking about the structural issues in the voting system that prevents, in your view, minorities from getting elected at the city level.
Yeah, this is a very serious issue, and something that I think is more important than the, whoever's on the NPA board at any given time. We have a structurally racist electoral system in Vancouver. It's called the at-large system, and candidates have to be elected citywide. It doesn't discriminate as much against candidates of Chinese ancestry, because the Chinese community is large, and it's also dispersed. There's no neighborhood in Vancouver where you don't have more than 10% Chinese ancestry. I mean, less than 10%. But when it comes to Filipino community or South Asian community, these tend to be more concentrated minorities. And as a result, the electorate, for whatever reason, has tended to prefer candidates with anglicized names, and I think that's a big problem. And on a citywide basis, that has a tendency to discriminate against candidates who don't have anglicized names. So it's not a coincidence that the one candidate of color from the South Asian community who was elected in the last election was Jennifer Reddy to school board, because she has a name.
Jennifer.
Yeah, and Reddy, too, yeah. R-E-D-D-Y, although that's a common name in South India.
Yeah.
That isn't known to people in North America. So the U.S. Supreme Court and various other U.S. court decisions has ruled that these multi-member districts, this at-large system where a bunch of candidates are elected, discriminates against concentrated visible minorities. And we saw that, we've seen it repeatedly, particularly against candidates with South Asian names in Vancouver from 1990 to 2008. And then in 2008, Raj Handal was elected to the Park Board. But even he was elected with thousands of votes fewer than others on his slate. But because it was a Vision Vancouver landslide, he still got elected. In 2011, we saw a bit of a change in that Nikki Sharma was elected to Park Board and came in the middle of the pack, so she did very well, and it seemed like a breakthrough. But then in 2014, when she ran for council, she and Tony Tang were the only two people who lost on the slate, the two people with non-anglicized names. So I would like to see the council address this, but the council, which is 10 of the 11 members, including the mayor, White, have not made this an issue to date. And I'm very disappointed, because Kennedy Stewart, the mayor, studied this in university. It was the subject of his graduate work.
How do you know that?
I know this because he was interviewed in The Strait in the mid-1990s on this subject, and I've interviewed him over the years on it.
Oh, I see.
So Kennedy Stewart...
That's very ironic.
...knows this. He told me to my face in an interview that to change the system, I have to run for mayor, and now he's mayor, and he still has three more years in office, so perhaps something will happen.
Yeah, but it sounds like it's a priority. I haven't heard anything other than you. Haven't heard any... you know, anybody else be talking about this issue?
No, he's investing his political capital in a SkyTrain system to UBC and rental housing in single-family zones. Some people might think that this is a good use of his political capital, that rapid transit and more rental housing are wonderful. So I can understand why he's doing that, but at the same time, I'm deeply disappointed that he's not addressing the structural racism.
So is it possible that this kind of issue with elected candidates could also feed into or motivate people from minorities to seek higher positions within parties like the NPA? For example, both Phyllis Tangwell, she's of East Asian descent, while Ray Goldenchild himself was a former candidate who did not make it. I think it was for Park Board, I'm not mistaken. And that could be a motivating factor to get people into, trying to achieve at least a party position where possibly in an AGM where a small number of members turn out, you have a better chance of, bringing your community out to support you.
Well, I think it's possible that they have run for their positions because they want to desegregate the NPA, and I think that's a laudable objective. And I think the challenge is, but at the in the elected system, first of all, though, I don't think either of them would be victimized by the non-anglicized name to the degree that many other Vancouverites would be.
Because the name Goldenchild, Ray Goldenchild, does not necessarily indicate your...
Yeah, I didn't even know he was of African ancestry until I saw his picture after I first noticed that he was endorsed by social conservatives, which caught my attention because over the years I've done a lot of reporting of candidates endorsed by social conservatives because I think our readers care about that. Phyllis Tang, I was aware of her as a Yes Vancouver candidate. She ran for council. And but at the same time, I've never heard any of either of them or anyone, for that matter, in the NPA go beyond saying, well, let's just have a hybrid ward and at-large system. The NPA has never had, with the exception of the occasional candidate like Duncan Wilson, who ran years ago for council, most of them have been very happy with the status quo.
Because it would favor their party because their support is kind of diffused into the Vancouver population.
Well, the other reason I think it would support their party is that big money benefits from the at-large system because you need a lot of money to get your name across the city. If you were only running in a concentrated constituency, like let's say you had a constituency of Point Grey or a constituency of Fraser View, then you could knock on enough doors and meet enough people and have a chance to turn an election. Or if you were locally known as a neighborhood activist or somebody who's involved in community issues, you'd have a good chance of getting elected. But when you're running citywide, it doesn't really matter as much what you've been doing in your neighborhood. You have to get your message across the city. Therefore, you have to join a slate, and therefore the slate has to have money. And the NPA tends to be supported by the wealthiest people in the city who are able to donate to the parties. And this is another problem at the municipal level, is there's no tax credits for people who donate to municipal political parties. So if you donate to the provincial or the federal party, you'll get something like 75 cents back on the dollar. But if you donate to a municipal party, you get nothing. So that almost creates a barrier for people who don't have means to donate to political parties, which again benefits the NPA.
I see. So last question. Given that the Strait was one of the sources that incorrectly identified another black man, Ron Haley, as Ray Goldenchild, what steps do you think the Strait can take in the future to ensure that such errors are not made?
I think the problem there has been blown out of proportion. I think it was a case of misidentification that the candidate, or the director, Ray Goldenchild, attributed, said it was solely responsible for the concerns about social conservatism, when the reality is he ran with a party that was explicitly against the rollout of the SOGI 123 program. So the problem of misidentifying a person, like I had this discussion internally, that if we'd misidentified a white person in a caption, would that be seen as racism? I don't think it would be. I think racism is also something that a person has in their heart, which you never can really tell. You can just look at the actions. The actions is we misidentified somebody in a picture.
Yeah, but with respect, so I believe oftentimes people of color feel that they, especially if you're in a minority in general, you feel that you're more likely to be misidentified than another white person. So you wouldn't deny that there is a racial element to misidentification in general.
Well, I think there is, but that's assuming that we looked at this person and just said, oh, it's him. But the reality is that a person insisted, a source, that was the case and that this was the person and guaranteed it, and that person was wrong. So if you look at what the lesson is don't take a single person's word in a situation like that ever again.
I see. Thanks so much, Charlie. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay, bye.
This interview was conducted on the unceded territories of the Hunka Minima-speaking Musqueam people by myself, Armand Rana, editing by Alex DeBoer, music by Blue Dot Sessions, song is Boston Landing.